I think a lesson like this is needed, and I hopefully in my introduction here I'll explain why, and it will be of benefit to you. We want to ask a question about just thinking in about the world in general, not maybe so much at this point focusing in on, like this morning when we talked about Christianity, and I gave you some quotes about, you know, a research that kind of used Christianity in a broad sense, but just think about women in general and women professing to be godly, women that actually possess a quiet and gentle spirit, which is what the Scriptures teach. And so I wonder if in this end of the last decade and at the start of this one, that we'll look back and in history it'll say it was the rise of the woman, and that we see there is such a push in our society to move away from God's Word, and we see that there is quite a push for women to be empowered. There's a lot of talk about how men have suppressed them. There is a lot of talk about women who are to be equal in pay, and a lot of things that, yeah, there's a sense of fairness, but a lot of this is driven by women. It's the old song, anything you can do, I can do better, and back and forth as they banter back and forth. And yet, you and I as Christians, of course, understand that God made man much different than the woman. They're made to succeed in perhaps two different directions. And so we see, though, that how shameful it is in our society as God's Word is moved away from. There's a large push in society for this idea of female dominance. And what you see in the entertainment industry is women have been, they say that they haven't had these leading roles. So what do you see now? A lot of the entertainment coming out now, it's the main character, the lead superhero, who, whatever the case may be, is a female. And that's in answer to pressure from society in our time. And so remember, I started off by saying godliness in a gentle and quiet spirit. So as we think about that, we think about how then what happens. Well, in religion, just in general, you start seeing a push within the man-made denominations for women to have power and authority. So we've seen in major denominations, we've seen them have to make the decision, is a female going to be allowed to preach? And so you see that one by one they drop to where at one time or another, 100 years ago, 75 years ago, 50 years ago, it was unheard of. But now I still remember when I was laboring in Michigan, that the Methodist preacher that traveled around from various congregations that everybody loved was a female. And the Methodists have had female preachers. We'll call them preachers for a very, very long time. Well, what's happening in the progressive, quote-unquote, Church of Christ? And by that, we would say, we're talking about, we understand there's a difference between institutions and non-institutions. And so a term that helps us distinguish that is we say a conservative versus a liberal. Well, what's happening in the, quote-unquote, mainstream Church of Christ is now you've got a movement away from what's already from where our vantage point. So look at it this way. Here's the truth. There's those that have moved away from the truth. Well, what's happening? You've got some over here that, what are they doing? Well, they're just trying to mirror the denominations. And so there's a real push for women to have the authority to preach, to lead prayer, to wait at the table. And so you'll see young girls up at the table, waiting at the table. I remember learning from a member of the church back in Richmond who had come out of that, but his parents did not. And as they got older, I think they moved to a different town. And when they got to that different town where I believe their daughter was worshiping, now he's in a congregation where they're already practicing these things, where the girls are waiting on the table. And for someone who you know, there's a real struggle at first. But then what happens is, well, that's my granddaughter. So now we become pleased as punch, you know. So basically what I'm trying to say is, you know, we have a right and a wrong here. And so we have to, you know, ask ourselves, well, what does the, you know, scriptures teach with regard to these things? And it's obvious to any visitor, if you have a visitor come in here that doesn't know anything about us, it doesn't take them long to realize that a man gave the announcements. A man led the prayer. A man is standing in the pulpit. A man is going to lead the closing prayer. A man is going to serve the Lord's Supper. Men are going to wait there. It won't take them long to figure out, hey, there isn't any women. And so, you know, they may have questions. Well, when we think about this type of push, well, how long is it before a congregation of the Lord's people maybe has to deal with this type of spirit or this type of attitude where there are women who are being influenced by society, our society, and so they're questioning, why is it that I can't wait at the table? Why is it that I can't give an invitation? Why is it that I cannot teach a class? And I suspect that there are congregations where there has been someone who has been approached, maybe the elders, maybe a preacher, and they've had to deal with something like that. I myself have not, thankfully. The closest thing I can liken it to is for the 10 years that I was in charge of athletics, I always put the young male campers in the head leadership role of a team. And I would have young ladies that would come who are captains on their volleyball team in school and all these things, and they want to know why they can't be a captain. And I would just look at them and say, because I want that young man to learn how to lead and be the head of something, and you to be a co-captain and work underneath that individual. And see, today, if I said that in the wrong things, that people, boo, you would be, you know, throwing things. And speaking honestly, that's the times that we live in. And so what happens is, and you might think about, as I've set this up, so you put all that together, and women in congregations may be thinking, well, what can I do? What can I do as a woman who professes godliness? And that's kind of what we want to talk about. Women need role models, for sure. Just like men need role models. Well, I think you have a great one back here in 2 Kings chapter 4. So let's get into our lesson. Let me make some observations about the text. I hopefully have given you, will give you some words that will maybe help you easily remember some of these points. But the first thing we'll start off with is we'll start off with just about talking about the situation. The city of Shunem is located right here. And Elisha's home base was kind of like they seem to be home base in Mount Carmel, Elijah as well. So it's not unheard of that he would come by, and all of a sudden he started building a relationship with this husband and wife in their home. Here is a picture from Leon Mauldin. He is a member of the church. As you know, he makes trips to the Bible Land. He said in the picture, it's this group right here. That's old, ancient Shunem where it was. So here, picture this Elisha the prophet coming down out of Mount Carmel, making his way, and it just became a stopping point for Elisha in this small village of Shunem. And by the way, Chad, you did great. You nailed all three of them. You said them exactly like I would say them, so we're not going to have any correcting of how you say them. I thought you did wonderful. And so what we want to look at first is there in verse 8. It says, now it happened on the day that Elisha went to Shunem, where there was a notable woman. King James Version, I think, says great woman. The English Standard Version says wealthy. And in looking at the definition, I didn't find wealth too often, though it was brought to my attention that it is translated wealth in a few situations, the word that is used here, the Hebrew word. But when the Bible uses a word like great or notable, it's something that I think we need to take note of, because this story is included in the Scriptures for a reason, and there's a reason we should look at what made her, I like the word notable, that would be to take note of. And then that idea of perhaps it's as simple as she just had wealth, but her character is what we want to examine, it's what we want to understand. What made her a woman of distinction? What made her a woman that was perhaps well known by others in a small town like this? I guess you could probably think that it wouldn't be hard to be known in a small village, and it's probably much larger there than it was in ancient times. But we want to consider, well, what made her notable? And the first thing I want to suggest is this, and that is that she was persuasive. So as you think about you that are women and you think about what can I do, now you're also going to find that these are traits that Christians need to have. But I'm going to explain, I think, some of the reasoning as to why I use these words and why I think they're pertinent to women. We all probably know somebody that's very persuasive. The King James Version actually translates this, constrained him to eat. And so what I picture is a woman who's saying, you got to eat. Come on. Stop and put down your shovel. You know you're going to have to eat. I've got everything ready. And they just stay and they persuade you. And then you're glad you did. And you're thankful that someone made you stop. That's the idea here of this idea of she was persuasive. In fact, some of you, look at your footnote. You probably have a footnote that says something like to lay hold on him, to lay hold on him. So it's almost like literally it means that it's like she grabs a hold of him, and that's that idea of being persuasive. You know, you need to do this. Please come into my home. You need to come in. I want you to come in. I want you to come in and have a good meal. I know you've been traveling, and that's the idea. And so the Shunammite knew Elisha needed to eat. And she's not going to take no for an answer. And so she persuades him. Well, in thinking about that, and the men can relate to this, sometimes, and it's, again, please understand, we're not talking about it's solely related to just a man. But, you know, a man can get caught up in something that he's doing. He can get caught up and just not even be thinking about he needs to stop and eat because he's trying to tear an engine apart. He's trying to tear the brakes, and he's filthy, and before you know it, you know, he's a couple hours past lunch and his wife's going to have to insist. She's going to have to be persuasive. You need to stop. You need, especially in my family, we get what's called hangry. Crims get hangry. And so it's best to stop and clean up and do the best you can and eat with grease on your sandwich than to go too far, because then nothing fits right and nothing goes well. And so this woman was persuasive. I think of, you don't have to turn, but you think of Lydia over in Acts chapter 16 and verse 15. She's converted, and then it says that she constrained us. In fact, it says she begged us to stay if they have found her faithful, and it says that she constrained them. So she was very persuasive in this idea of begging. You don't think of somebody who's begging and it says, would you come to the house? And you say, no, we don't have time. He said, well, that's not much of a begging, right? So it would be like she must have been very persuasive. And I think that can be a very, very good trait of someone who is a Christian. And I think women are often very persuasive because they understand the importance of something that maybe needs to be done sooner than later. And then another thing that I see there in verse 9 and 10 is that she is perceptive. And I've always liked this about the Shunammite woman. And that is that it says, look now, verse 9, I know this is a holy man of God who passes by us regularly. So here's somebody that's been given some thought to this. He's coming by on a regular basis. And so as she thinks about this and she realizes that a relationship is being established, she then says, let us make a small room on the wall and let us put up a bed for him there and a table and a chair and a lampstand. So it will be whenever he comes to us, he can turn in there. So this woman, this notable woman, is perceptive. She's, and if you want to think, well, what does that word mean? It's the opposite of being clueless. And you can think about people, whether it be a male or a female, that you go, that person is clueless. They don't seem to have a clue as to what's going on around them. It'd be like the woman doesn't know that Elisha's been passing by the house on a regular basis. you know, she's clueless. Well, sadly, the reason she becomes somebody to look to as a woman of faith that is perceptive is to look and realize that it's a trait that you have to even develop. It's something that you may have to develop and work on and get better at. And it may be that you generally don't know what's going on around you as a female. And so you would need to work on that. You'd have to be more observant, more observant. Does that make sense? All right, so knowing he's a man of God, and that's important too. She sees a value there that this is somebody who speaks on behalf of God, is doing that work, and she perceives that. And she's perceptive to know that it's happening on a regular basis. And so she has a great idea. And her idea is we need to do something for him. And so let me make another point here in this idea of perception. And I speak for myself. Men are often good at implementing a plan like this, but they're not the one that came up with it. And I think that's because of that quality of perception, being able to perceive a special need like that, being able to and to think about how important it would be to make this man comfortable. How does a man handle that? Oh, Elisha's coming, throw down some hay and, you know, give him a place, you know, here, catch, here's a slab of ham, and you throw it across the room and say, make yourself comfortable. Is that the way women tend to behave when it comes to this type of a situation? The answer is no, as the text will tell us here in just a moment. So, you know, many of our sisters in Christ are very perceptive to the needs of others. And so you need to know that you're a great asset. You're a great asset in a home. You're a great asset in a congregation because of how perceptive you can be in matters of care and concern. And so she didn't just say to her husband, let's do something. She actually said very specifically, let's build a room, and I picture it as a loft. Let's have a bed, let's have a chair, let's have a table, let's have a lamp. And so, you know, so he can have his own personal space of comfort. That's what that's about. That's about making him comfortable in their home. And so I want to make a point again that to men here is that men need to have some wisdom in listening to their wives, elders listening to the sisters in the congregation, being, you know, aware of that type of situation to listen because of that quality of perception. And so I think we can learn a lot. But it doesn't stop there, because what you see in verse 11 is that she's also very productive. It happened one day that he came down there and he turned into the upper room and lay down there. And you think, well, what does that mean? Well, in verse 10, she says, here's the plan. Verse 11, it's been done. Right? The plan has been implemented. They have been productive. And her husband's on board. And again, you ever know somebody has a lot of great ideas, but they never bear any fruit? Oh, they got a lot of great ideas, but there's no production. There's no follow-through. And so we see the importance of being productive. Well, I want to make another point just on the word. And I noticed Chad's reading there in verse 10. It just said, let us make a small upper room. The New King James, I think the other versions actually says, please. And so what I see there in that, in this idea, is that she didn't make a demand of her husband. I think that indicates her spirit as well, that this would be something that he would need to agree to. But it is a great idea. And so what I can picture in my mind is, I can picture, and the text doesn't tell this, but I can picture them building this loft in a part of their home, and the man and she get that done, and then he says, well, here's the bed and here's the chair. And what does a man do? Chad, what would you do? Here's the loft. You'd say, well, there's the bed. Slide it over there. And you'd say, and here's the chair. And here's the table. And here's a lamp. And then what happens? Well, the bed goes here. and the table would be better over here. And I'm going to fix the light where the light... And I'm telling you, that's not me. That's the Shunammite woman. And I want you to see that they're using their personal resources. And she wasn't just an observer. She was doing her part. And a faithful woman will be very productive in a home. She'll be productive in a local congregation. Even though she can't lead, you know, and has no authority to stand behind the pulpit and to wait at the table and those types of things, there are so many things that women can be productive at, using their perception, maybe sharing that with the men here so they can know that here's a situation that you've perceived, and then the men can say, oh, we didn't see that, and then realize that this is a good thing to be done. So I can't stress enough that you're talking about somebody who used their own resources to accomplish this, and it took up a part of their home. This would be like, we're going to build a room. Think about this. We're going to build a room off the back of our house for this person to be comfortable when they come through. And today, that's kind of like, that's unheard of. Well, let's look at Elisha's assessment here. And I think this deals with the idea of hospitality. Look at verse 11. It happened one day when he came and he lay down. And when he spoke to his servant, he said, I want you to call the Shunammite woman. And she stood before him. And he said, say now to her, look, you have been concerned for us with all this care. And so what we see is that his assessment is that you have been concerned for us, and you've done this with great care. Now, he's talking to her. He hasn't called the man and say, oh, you've been so good. You've given me the lamp, and you always make sure I've got oil for the lamp, and you fluffed our pillows, and you changed our sheets. And he realizes that this woman has given great care and great concern. And so I think that's a wonderful testament to her character. In the Bible, we find this. And we're still studying about her today, just like we talked about Abraham this morning. And so another great quality of a woman is her care and concern. And I also keep emphasizing the opposite of that is men can be very gruff about these types of things. So in 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 9, you don't have to turn there because I just want to kind of sum this up. Peter says to be hospitable. To be hospitable. King James, I believe, says use hospitality. In Romans chapter 12, verse 13, he says, given to hospitality, given to it. In Titus chapter 1 and verse 8, it is a faithful execution within an elder's home. It's something that he must do, be hospitable in his home. Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 2, a lover of strangers is what that means, hospitality. He says, do not forget to entertain strangers in Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 2. So again, I've said often, I believe our home is one of God's greatest blessings that he gives us to use for his glory. And here is this woman who is doing exactly that. Now, I want to pause again, just picturing this in my mind. This is a simple home. This is nothing like what we dwell in today. She and her husband may very well have been wealthy, but her home would not compare at all to anything that we have today. Can you imagine the dirt you had to deal with? I mean, this is the days before concrete. And if you had a rug, you were hanging it out over something every day, beating it, just like you may remember your grandmother having to do. You imagine the dust all over everything. And you can just imagine that. Well, the opposite today in this idea of trying to look at what the Bible talks about is important and as a good example is you've got these fine homes that nobody ever sees. And then I think about, isn't it interesting if you watch, and yes, I do, men, watch HGTV because I have daughters and a wife and I've had daughters at home now for quite some time. They build, what's important to you? The kitchen. Oh, if you put money in your kitchen, you're going to get so much value. You got to have, oh, we want the perfect kitchen. And they come in and they go, oh, And then what do they say?
Maybe I'll cook now.
And you're like, you just spent $20,000 renovating a kitchen and you don't even use the kitchen? Listen, we get, you know, that's kind of funny. But in reality, in 2020, in our country, the restaurants are full. And there's beautiful kitchens. Beautiful kitchens. Showroom kitchens. And then it's... Do you understand? And so now what has Stacy done? Well, Stacy put the woman in the kitchen. How dare he? And she's supposed to do the laundry. You're laughing, but that's exactly what you're being taught, young lady, in your day and time. That what Mr. Krim's talking about, Brother Krim is talking about, is pure nonsense and ridiculous. And it's just not true. It's just not true. It's just completely backwards and upside down. Well, this woman was productive. Another thing is that there was perspective, verse 13. And I say that because it was obvious that this close relationship has been established. And that's what I want you to understand, too, that there's a relationship that's being established between Elisha, the man, and the woman because of this kind deed. And it doesn't go unnoticed because what Elisha says is, Elisha says, you've given us this great care, you've been concerned, and I want to do something special for you. So what does he say? He says, should I go to the king? In other words, I have the ear of the king. Is there anything we can do? Have you got a problem with your neighbor? Is there anything you need because something's not getting done? Let me go ask the king a favor and let me introduce you to him. Right? Okay. Or maybe what if I talk to the commander of the army? Let's talk to the Secretary of Defense. Tommy, what's on your mind? This is what's being asked. Does somebody trying to get into the army and they can't in your family? You want me to put a bug in the ear? That's what he's asking. That's what he's asking. What can we do? These are the upper levels of rule. This would be nobility in a society. And Elisha is saying, what can I do for you? And what does she say? I dwell among my own people. She has perspective. She has perspective. In other words, that's not important to her. There's no importance. There's satisfaction and contentment found there. She's found her place, and she knows how to be successful in it. And she doesn't seek those things at all. And so what you see is that there's no gain of notoriety. She's happy showing concern and care. And all I can liken this to is not the asking a favor, but this just the over idea of her having the right perspective, and that is the way a gospel preacher feels at the end of a gospel meeting week, the way Lee Hyatt and his wife felt after they were here with us. They felt very special. They were treated very special. They felt really good about the work. No doubt he felt good about the work that he had done, the preaching that he had done, and the great care that he had received. And what's interesting is when you think about how this goes, again, in seeing the importance that, thinking about Elisha and the Shunammite woman, here's a man of, who's a man of God, and he's got an extra pillow. And the husband brought the pillow. But who's the one that said, take him an extra pillow? Because I can tell you in my mouth, what comes out of my mouth is, you know, he doesn't need an extra pillow. And the reason I don't want to take an extra, I don't want to climb up the loft and throw it to Elisha. But when you do that, who's behind that? The Shunammite woman's behind that. Now, again, the text doesn't say these things. I'm just talking about the realities of some of the things that we're talking about. Men behave one way, women behave another. More concerned, built and wired that way. I'm convinced they won't need another pillow. And then what you find out the next morning is Lisa's, for my family, Lisa's going, I told you you'd need an extra pillow. First thing he came down, he says, boy, I had a creak in my neck the first night, but slept much better with that extra pillow. And I was like, nah, they don't need an extra pillow. They'll be fine. Perspective, the right perspective. Not trying to climb a ladder, but happy where they are. There's another thing that I want you to see that I hadn't picked up on, and that's in verse 15. So he calls her. So basically, let me read what happens. Verse 14. So he said, when this is done, she said, I'll dwell among my people. Then here's Elisha's response. What then is to be done for her? He's speaking to Gehazi. Gehazi says, actually, she has no son and her husband is old. She doesn't have any children. And it doesn't look like she's ever going to have any children. So here's what is said in verse 15. So he called her, and when he called her, she stood in the doorway. Now, why would the passage say something like that? Propriety. It would not be right or proper for this married woman to enter into Elijah's loft. She stood at the door. And I think that's a good point. I think that's a really good point. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 22, abstain from every form of evil. And so that's important. Her joy would be found in motherhood. Look at verse 16. Then he said, about this time next year, you shall embrace a son. And she said, no, my Lord, man of God, do not lie to your maidservant. But the woman conceived and bore a son when the appointed time had come of which Elisha had told her. You'll have to read the rest of the story. The son dies, and but the son's brought back to life because of the relationship that they had. And it started with her perception and the things that we've been talking about tonight. Her joy is found in motherhood. That's what she really desired. Well, what's our society like today? Is there joy in motherhood? I think the daycares might say otherwise. The mothers out there might try to tell you that's not what I'm seeing. Somebody else raising the children. This woman had great joy in motherhood. That's what she wanted. And I believe that God has wired women that way. I don't have that desire because I have no ability to carry a child in a womb. I don't have a clock that ticks that God wired within me. That's all creation. That's the difference between the sexes, and that's the difference in why it's so corrupt and polluted for us to be coming along in this day and time and saying a male can be a female and a female can be a male and they can be whatever they want to be. That's just ludicrous. It defies everything that we know to be true. And here's a woman that is worthy of imitation. Well, the second person was Tabitha, but I'm going to stop right there because I didn't know how far I would get, and I really want to give her the time that's needed, although you will find that she's very, very much like the Shunammite woman. Well, if you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, we want to extend an invitation to you to do exactly what God has instructed you to do. If you want to come and to wash your sins away, we stand ready to help with that. Steve has chosen an invitation song that we're going to sing and invite you to come. If you're a child of God and things are amiss in your life, we stand ready to pray with you and for you as together we stand and sing.